All right, here we go. Are You Covenanted, part 43? Yeah. And we're continuing here in dealing with the Corinthian congregation. We're going to go to 2 Corinthians here. And we're going to read quite a bit here in 2 Corinthians, starting in chapter 3. But this one's going to be a little bit tough from the point of view of there's a lot of context that you can't get. If we just kind of walk through starting in chapter 3 and hit things as they come about, it's very hard to understand the framing. Now, remember, we've talked about framing a lot in the last couple of weeks. You know, where something starts and where it ends, everything in the middle kind of fits into that frame or that context. So I want to help hopefully get some of that framing here of the things that Shaul is trying to talk about. And the issue about covenant actually comes up only twice here, specifically in chapter 3. But we may take this thing all the way to the end of chapter 6 into chapter 7. So that's going to be quite a bit here in 2 Corinthians. But we will be dealing with some of the things that hopefully you'll appreciate the challenge of them, because these are some of the things that you get attacked by mainstream Christianity about on a regular enough basis. And so let's kind of talk about a little overview of the things that we're going to try to cover here. All right? So in chapter 3 and in verse 6, it says, now this is Shaul talking about, who also made us competent as servants of a renewed covenant, not of the letter, but of the Spirit, but the letter kills, for the letter kills, but the Spirit gives life. So that, anybody ever had to deal with that before? Okay, we're going to deal with that issue. We're just going to decide that Paul's a heretic and just wipe out 2 Corinthians and go on to something else. No, I'm kidding. No, I think we can kind of explain all this stuff, but you have to have the context, and that's where the problem is, okay? So he starts off in chapter 3 saying, are we to begin to recommend ourselves again? Or do we need as some letters of recommendation to you or from you? So he starts off by, he's going to getting into a bunch of stuff, and he's reestablishing the authority that he has within the structure of the body. Now, part of the context that we need to have is, well, we should be asking the question, well, why would he need to be doing this? Well, because there were people in Corinth, just like there are people here in this congregation and every congregation since Paul's time until now, and even going earlier, we see this even in the Torah portions, who will choose different leadership than established leadership. And they missed the point. So there were a bunch of people then, just like today, coming from the more orthodox forms of Judaism or the other flavors of Judaism, who are trying to have influence over those coming into the body. Because remember, the body started off as a Jewish sect. And so here's Paul saying, look, you may be listening to a whole bunch of other people out there who are telling you you're doing this wrong or that wrong, or you shouldn't be doing this or shouldn't be doing that. But I thought you were under my authority, under Messiah's authority. And so Paul is trying to reestablish that vertical structure and his position in that vertical structure. So the issue has to do with authority, which is the same thing, by the way, that we had in 1 Corinthians. When we're looking at that, the whole section that we were looking at in 1 Corinthians 11 was about order, vertical alignment, being under authority, etc., in the context of the body or the assembly. So the Corinthian congregation is still having a similar problem that they were having at the first letter. And now in the second letter, they're dealing with those kind of things. So Paul has to start out with this idea of saying, do we need to begin again by reestablishing who I am and what we're doing, him and his leadership that was there? Do we have to kind of reestablish our positions? Do I need to bring you letters of recommendation? So this is a challenge here as we go through this. So framing is very important. Now, when we take that all the way to chapter 7 and verse 1, he says, having then, after all of what he said in chapters 3, 4, 5, and 6, which we are going to cover, he says, having then these promises, so we're going to have to figure out what those promises are that he says in those other chapters, beginning where when he says, do I need to recommend myself again? All the way to here, he's going to talk about some promises. He says, let us cleanse ourselves from all defilement of the flesh and spirit, perfecting set apartness in the fear of Elohim. So the framework is, I have authority and I'm here to help you with these promises, be motivated to cleanse yourself of defilement of the flesh and spirit. And everything in the middle is dealing with that problem. Okay, are we clear on that? He starts off with, I want to reestablish where my position is because I'm going to need you to understand a bunch of stuff in order to, because of everything I'm going to explain to you, encourage you to cleanse yourself of defilement of flesh and spirit. And to focus on perfecting set apartness or kadoshness or holiness in the fear of Elohim. Everything else has to fit now into that frame. That's kind of our beginning and end point of that point. He then gets into some other stuff in chapter 7 going forward. But I want us to kind of get that framework as we go into it. So in chapter 3, when it starts talking about things like the letter killing and the spirit giving life, it's got to fit into this context somehow. When he talks about things like, let's see, with that which is passing away versus that which remains. Okay, that's another thing that comes up here in 2 Corinthians. Another thing mainstream Christianity we use to say, well, it's the Old Testament that was passing away, and the New Testament is what we have. And the law was done away, and the freedom of Messiah. They use these things. Yes, no? Okay? Completely not what it's talking about. Well, let's understand what it is talking about. But we have to realize that as we're reading it, if we just zoom in on one verse, like verse 6, where it says, because it says, the new covenant is not of the letter, but of the spirit, because the letter kills and the spirit gives life. Well, if you don't know what he means by that, which, by the way, he doesn't explain right there. It takes a bunch of more verses in chapters 4 and 5 to kind of explain that. Maybe even into 6, then you have no idea what he's talking about. So you can't just zoom in and micro zoom. You have to have a more macro position. You got to zoom out and say, okay, what are the issues? Remember, context is, who's speaking? It's Rav Shaul. It's the Apostle Paul. Who's he talking to? The Corinthian congregation. What's the issue? Apparently, them hearing from a wrong group of people and having wrong authorities about some of the things that have to do with the law, the covenant, and their walk. Okay? Now, in that framework, the people that are most likely the at issue here are the traditional Jewish members who just understand from a Jewish point of view, without Messiah, the context of walking according to the letter. Whereas with Mashiach, we understand there's the spirit of what was written, which is the fullness of what was intended. And so we have to understand that that's part of what we've talked about many times. So let's go ahead and start to read this beginning in verse 1 again. And as we start hitting on things, hopefully we'll see where the issues are and how those issues start to clarify. All right? But I'm going to ask you to be patient. This may take a couple of, you know, one or two parts of what it's going to take to get through these couple of chapters. And let Paul explain himself if we're patient. Okay? Okay, again, back to verse 1 of chapter 3. By the way, sometimes I feel that as a leadership, as a ministry person, I almost feel like verse 1 applies to me half the time. I have to talk to people like, do I have to go again and establish my authority and position in your life and that you came here and what you're doing? It's like, okay. Are we to begin to recommend ourselves again, or do we need, as some, letters of recommendation to you or from you? This is where some, I guess, might have been coming and saying, well, I'm under such and such teacher and so on and such, so you should be listening to me now. Okay? He says, you are our letter, having been written in our hearts, known and read by all men. I can say the same of you guys. Okay? Have you not experienced the leadership in this ministry? Has it not made any difference? Have you not changed your walk and adjusted things a certain way? So that speaks volumes, as they would say, as to what's been going on. Making it obvious that you are a letter of Messiah served by us. That's the whole goal of our leadership, and should be of any leadership, to be obvious that you are a letter of Messiah served by us. What does it say as our ministry sort of, catch line or motto or whatever it is, slogan? Working together to serve the body. So you should be clearly of Messiah served by us, written not with ink, but by the Spirit of the living Elohim, not on tablets of stone, but on fleshly tablets of the heart. Now, bear in mind, as he's saying this, you should know, without going back to all of the parts of the heart of the matter, etc., where we covered this over and over and over again, how many times did you read in the heart of the matter teaching as we went from Genesis all the way to Revelation that which was written on stones was supposed to then be lifted up and brought into your heart? So Paul is referring to that idea. Yet Christianity is going to use this to use it as a separator between the two. To differentiate that was not for us now, that was for then, this is for now. Using a very dispensationalist sort of way of looking at it. He's saying, no, Those things that were on the tablets of stone need to now be written on our fleshly tablets of the heart. And such trust we have towards Elohim through Messiah. So his other big context going through this is, I really believe he's talking to people that say, you don't need Messiah. Just keep the commandments and you're fine. I think that's what's going on here. By the way, that's going on in the body right now. A lot of people are going right from Christianity into Messianic, right over into Judaism. That's the issue I think was going on right here. And he's saying, look, and such trust we have toward Elohim through the Mashiach, through Messiah. Not that we are competent in ourselves to reckon any matters from ourselves, but our competence from Elohim. So again, he's reestablishing his anointed appointed status. He's saying, this is not of me and my flesh. If you don't see Elohim and Messiah working through me, well, then you need to be somewhere else. Okay? He's saying the competence comes from Elohim. Now, of course, that's only if you happen to be observing and see that there is competence. But recognize that competence is from Elohim. You know, I had a person a while back, I don't know what triggered this, I guess it had to do with the word competence and the whole thing here, you know, accuse, because I don't speak in tongues, accuse me of not having the Spirit, and started telling everybody in the congregation that I was not qualified to lead the congregation because I didn't have the Spirit, because I didn't speak in tongues. Now, bear in mind, I sat down and had lunch with this person to find out what was going on, and he explained this all to me, and I looked him in the eye and I said, let me ask you a question. So according to what you're saying, that I don't have the Spirit, that means that you believe that the teachings I do are on my power alone. I said, I'm sorry, but I'm not that good. Okay? I mean, should you understand that's what you're saying? By saying I don't have the Spirit and I'm not qualified to lead, then everything I've ever done that you've told me how great it was and this and that and the other thing, that was all on my power alone. No. You all know that that can't be true. But see, that's the thing. He's saying here, look, my competence is only competence because Elohim, it's his competence. The competence comes from Elohim. Okay? Who has also made us competent as servants of a renewed covenant, not of the letter, but of the Spirit, for the letter kills, but the Spirit gives life. But if the administering of death in letters engraved on stones was esteemed so that the children of Israel were unable to look steadily at the face of Moshe because of the esteem of his face, which was passing away, how much more esteemed shall the administering of the Spirit not be? For if the administering of condemnation had esteem, the administering of righteousness exceeds much more in esteem. For indeed, what was made esteemed has no esteem in this respect, in view of the esteem that excels. For if that which is passing away was esteemed, much more that which remains in esteem. Okay, everybody understood that completely, right? What? Okay, let's try to unravel this a little bit. Okay, so first of all, he says, the letter, it's not of the letter, but the Spirit. I would agree. They had the letter of the law. By the way, those who were walking the letter of the law, how many of them made it through the 40-year journey in the wilderness? Two. Okay, of those 20 and older. The letter did not provide life. Those who embraced the spirit of it found life. The fullness of what Yahweh intended. Okay? He also says in the blessing and cursing chapter, if you, and that's in the letter, the letter says there's curses. The letter says if you don't obey, this happens. The letter says a lot of things. So that's where the letter kills. If you don't obey the letter, it brings death. If you obey it in the spirit of the fullness of the intent, it brings life. Let's not confuse that the letter is evil and kills, but the spirit, this ooey-gooey ethereal thing, nobody knows what it is, brings life. Well, that's not what he's talking about. He's saying the literal peshat obedience doesn't bring the life. It's doing it fully how he intended it that brings the life. With all your heart, with all your being, with all of your emunah, your belief, your trust, and your faith. They did it without the emunah, right? When they came to the land, they spied it out, and what did they do? They panicked. They had fear, doubt, and all kinds of other, you know, negative. They didn't have the trust. There was no emunah. Emunah is the Hebrew for faith, belief, trust. And so he's saying here, you have to understand there are people trying to get your attention here, but they do not want you to have this other level. They think the way they've been going along for however many thousand years up to this point was plenty fine. We don't need this Mashiach guy. Now he says, look, if the administering of death in letters engraved on stones was honored, was glorified, was holy, so that the children of Israel were not even able to look at Moses' face because of it. So he's not saying it wasn't, he's saying it was. So now we got to be careful. Paul is saying absolutely that these letters that he's calling the administering of death in letters was enough to make it so you couldn't even look at Moses. So he's not saying it was bad, wrong, or evil in any kind of sort of way. He's saying it was so incredible that the one who brought the tablets down, you couldn't even look at his face. Now that's not what you heard on Sunday. That's not what you heard taught in your churches. He's saying, however, how much more shall the administering of the fullness of the intent be? How much more? Not instead of, in addition to. How much more would it be? You're eating ice cream and you say you'd like more. What are you going to get, a hamburger now? No, you want more ice cream. You're eating ice cream and say, hey, can I have some more? This is more of. It is on top of. It's in addition to. It's not instead of. The problem that Paul is dealing with authority here is how people are looking at the law in an incomplete way, not whether or not they're looking at the law and shouldn't be. I'll say that again. The problem here is that they're looking at the law in an incomplete way, not that it's wrong or somehow they shouldn't even be looking at it. I'm going to prove this here. He's going to talk about it very clearly in other places as we keep going, okay? Now, what you also got to understand in the context here is that these people are very aware of what happened in Babylon. Not with Babylon, in Jeremiah's day when Babylon came to take them into captivity. They're very familiar with when the northern kingdom was taken away by Assyria. They're very familiar with the diaspora, the dispersion, and the scattering. They're very familiar with that punishment, that death, so to speak, that cutting off. And so he's referring to those things that were part of that. But when you embrace the spirit of the fullness of the intent, guess what? You're restored. So he's talking about restoration versus the status they were in at that time, which had a certain sense of condemnation because they had received condemnation for breaking the commandments. So now he says, for if the administering of condemnation had honor. In other words, he's talking to an audience. He said, look, for if the administering of that which, when you broke it, brought condemnation on you, was still honored, not that it was condemned, but you were condemned because you broke. In the context, you can see that's what Paul's talking about here. If the administering of what brought condemnation on you had esteem, then the administering of righteousness, of what would bring righteousness onto you, would exceed even more. Because righteousness comes through fullness of the intent. Remember, they were mechanically keeping the law going through the wilderness, and yet they still didn't make it across into the land because they didn't fully embrace with emunah, with faith, what was being offered to them. So let's be careful. When he says, for if the administering of condemnation, he's not calling that which he just called esteem, so esteemed you couldn't even look at Moses, condemnation now. Let's see. So telling people not to murder, not to steal, not to commit adultery, this is all condemnation. By the way, I had a conversation with somebody the other day where they were talking about having a conversation with somebody who was coming out of the mainstream or still in the mainstream about all of this stuff and how the law was done away with. I think that next time somebody tells you that, you need to ask them which ones. And then ask them, okay, how do you know which ones to pick? Because they only want to pick the ones they don't want to do, like the eating differently and keeping different days. They still want to believe that you shouldn't murder, shouldn't commit adultery, shouldn't steal, blah, blah, blah. So my first question should be, okay, which ones are you talking about? Which ones were done away? Please show me the verse that tells me which ones. Because apparently it's all, but you know, they'll say tithing is something you have to do. Okay, well, tithing isn't even in the top 10. And theoretically it was designed specifically for the temple service and the Melchizedekian priesthood, which they are not honoring either one. Okay, those are the only two places you see anybody receiving tithes. One of those two priesthoods. Ask them those questions. Because eventually you might get a guy like a Creflo Dollar, at least is honest enough to tell you even the Ten Commandments are done away with. Go look that up on YouTube. Okay? Because after all, if they're going to say the law was done away with, what part wasn't? Well, the parts we like. The parts we agree with. This is the problem. This is one of the problems. I shouldn't say it is the problem. It's one of the problems. So he says in verse 9, if the administering of that which brought condemnation had glory and honor, and it did, the administering of that which brings righteousness exceeds much more. For indeed, what was made esteemed had no esteem in this respect in view of the esteem that excels. In other words, he's saying, look, that was nothing. The glory and honor of that was nothing compared. He's making a comparison here. That's all he's doing. He's saying, this was great, this is better. But he's using language that confuses us because he says, this kills, this brings life. This brought condemnation, this brings righteous, you know, glory and honor. As he's making these comparisons. Continuing here, then he goes in verse 11, for if that which is passing away was esteemed, much more that which remains is esteemed. Having then such expectation, we use much boldness of speech. So now when he's talking about that which is passing away had esteem, meaning that system that seemed to only honor and glorify the letter is passing away. It's more than that. It's not just that system anymore. We're now having a new system that's that plus, not that instead. We're not doing any replacement theology here, but that system that was limited to and did not go any further then is no longer the system that's going to be ruling in your life. When he talks about passing away here. Now, we have to understand there, where's the other verse I want to go to? Go to 4:18 just for a second. And it says, we are not looking on what is seen, but on what is not seen. For what is seen passes away, but what is not seen is everlasting. So now he's giving you at least a little context of what he's talking about. And we're not there yet, but I just wanted to jump there to show you what I'm talking about. So what's passing away is the physical, seen, letter of the law thing. And what's coming now is the unseen, which is when you do it in the fullness of its intent, it brings so much more. But you got to be able to embrace that reality. Okay, so let's continue so we can get eventually to 4:18. But I just wanted to use that for context, okay? Also in 4:11, it says, for we, the living, are always delivered to death for the sake of Yeshua, that the life of Yeshua might also be manifested in our mortal flesh. So that death indeed is working in us, but the life in you. So now, oh, wait a minute. He just said the law brings death, or whatever it is that he's trying, whatever Christianity is trying to tell you here, this letter brings death. But then he says, wait a minute, we the living are always delivered to death for the sake of Yeshua. In other words, there's things where you're going to have to die to self, all that me, me, me. Why did they mess up with the letter? I interpret it my way. I do it my way. I do what I want. It's going to bring death. You are self-sovereign, do it my way, do whatever I want thing has got to be passing away. The old way of doing things is passing away. We have a new framework, a new context. Messiah starts off with his very first message. You thought it was enough just not to murder somebody. I'm going to tell you wanting to kill him is bad too. Just as bad, he says. You didn't commit adultery. Hey, good for you. Well, not really. Why? Because you wanted to commit it. You desired it, you thought about it, you meditated on it. That's just as bad. But you think you're fine. This is the context in which Paul is teaching here. So he says, for that which is passing away was esteemed, and it was. Much more that which remains. So what remains? Then you have to ask your Christian friends, well, what remains? Because he's talking about remaining from that, if that's what he's talking about. Well, the flesh is going to pass away, and that which remains is the unseen. The flesh is passing away. The things that brought the condemnation, the law didn't bring condemnation, our failure to submit to it brought condemnation. Did the law condemn anything? No. The behavior of the northern and southern kingdoms brought them the condemnations they received for what they did. But we also are told at some point in the future, and you see that starting with Messiah, there would be restoration for all of them. Those that were lo ruchama, lo ami, not no mercy, not my people, would be called the children of living Elohim. Oh. And that's part of the Messiah's message. It's part of what Paul's talking about here. So now hopefully we get a little bit of better understanding when it talks about for that which is passing away was esteemed. It was, but much more that which remains. So what remains? What remains, hopefully, is understanding in the fullness of context what the law's purpose was. It wasn't just a bunch of do's and don'ts. It needed to be embraced as a way of life because it brings transformation from what you are into what he is. It's a transformative thing. When we talk about the spirit versus the letter, also in chapter 5 and verse 5, it says, "Now he who has prepared us for the same purpose is Elohim, who has given us the spirit as a pledge of what is to come." So he gave us a sense of the fullness of the intent as a pledge of what is to come, which is us becoming him. Us putting off the corruptible and taking on the incorruptible. So hopefully we're having some of that context here. So what was going on here? Let's continue. Verse 12, "Having then such expectation, we use much boldness of speech, not like Moses, who put a veil over his face so that the children of Israel should not look steadily at the end of what was passing away. But their minds," listen now, "their minds were hardened, for to this day, when the old covenant is being read, the same veil remains not lifted, because in Messiah it is taken away." In other words, a revealing that there's more. Not that that's bad and awful and should be done away with, but that there's more. They're still hearing only that limited understanding. There's a veil there. They're not going further. He says, "But to this day when Moses is being read, a veil lies on their hearts." Ah, so this is a heart issue and a thinking, a mind issue. It's not a law issue. Just read what it says. Don't add anything or take away. I mean, Paul's very clear here. He says, their minds were hardened, and there's a veil lying on their hearts. So he didn't say that the information was bad or wrong. It's how they were thinking about it and how they were embracing it emotionally in their hearts. This is important. By the way, we know there's other places that talk about having a hardened heart and being estranged from the blessings and the promises and being walking in the delusion of your own mind and all that other stuff. And so we know that these things are also in here. You know, we look at Ephesians 2. We go there a lot. Verse 1, "And you were dead in your trespasses and sins, in which you once walked according to the course of the world, according to the rule of the authority of the air, of the spirit that is now working in the sons of disobedience." Oh, there's a spirit there, not a good one. He says, but we have to understand that this was a time where he says that they, in verse 11, "Therefore remember that you were once Gentiles in the flesh, who were called the uncircumcision by what is called the circumcision made in the flesh by hands, that at the time you were without Messiah, excluded from the citizenship of Israel, strangers from the covenants of promise, with no expectation and without Elohim." Wow, that's pretty clear and straightforward. And all of this happens because they didn't have their mind open. Okay, so it talks about in verse 5 there, he says, "Even when we were dead in our trespasses, made us alive together with Messiah." By doing what? We talk about this in the Father and Son teaching, by opening up our eyes and our ears and our hearts. Can we understand that only two of the men 20 and older had open eyes, ears, and hearts? The others had closed hearts and veils and problems because they panicked and they were afraid. And even if they weren't ones that were the 10 that spied the land, they were listening to the 10. They were influenced by the 10 and weren't listening to the 2 who said, "Hey, what are we waiting for? Let's go. The land is great. Look at the size of this big bunch of grapes we just brought out of there. Oh, don't worry about the giants. Elohim says we're good, we're good." Remember, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago or whenever it was, week last or whatever, about you embracing, if he's called you, stop fussing and fretting over whether or not you can make it. He called you knowing. I've had counsel sessions about this. If you're watching now, I am talking about you. I'm also talking about the 25 other people that had this problem last week. So many of you are starting to really have a huge struggle, or you've always had a struggle, embracing that he knows everything you did up until the moment he opened your eyes. So stop thinking that he was just doing it as a cruel joke. Because some of you are thinking, well, I'm never going to make it because I did this. But he knew that when he called you. You did all of that before he opened your eyes. Do you not think he's aware of what you did? All that stuff? Yet he called you anyway, knowing you can do this and you can be in. And so stop worrying about that and be embracing it, thankful for it, and walk in it. Let's continue. So here's the problem. Their minds were hardened. It doesn't say the law was bad. The minds were hardened. And when the old covenant is being read, the same veil remains. So what it's saying is, when the old covenant is being read, they're still not seeing it correctly. He didn't say the old covenant was the problem. He says they're the problem. They're seeing it with veiled eyes and veiled hearts, or hardened minds and veiled hearts. And when one turns to the master, the veil is taken away. Verse 16. Now Yahweh is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of Yahweh is, there is freedom. So part of the other problem was those who looked at the law as a burden, and some of you still do. Of course, even we have to read Yaakov James's book, and where he talks about in his letter that it's the Torah of freedom. When you look into the word, the truth, the Torah of freedom. So Yahweh is Spirit, and where the Spirit of Yahweh is, there is freedom. And we all, as with unveiled face, we see as in a mirror the esteem of Yahweh, are being transformed into the same likeness from esteem to esteem as from Yahweh, the Spirit. Ah, he's now endorsing what I was making the point of, is that all of this was supposed to be transformative. You wonder sometimes, maybe, wonder where Rabbi got that stuff. I don't know. There it is in 2 Corinthians 3:18. We are looking in the mirror, and we're seeing the esteem of Yahweh, and are being transformed into that same likeness by not the letter, but the Spirit of that which was on the tablets. That which was on the tablets was never the problem. The people with the hardened minds and the people with veiled hearts interpreted it to be a problem. Hopefully we can receive that. All right. Verse 1 of chapter 4. Therefore, in other words, based on all the stuff we just said, having this service, even as we receive compassion, we do not lose heart. So now he's referring back to himself and the leadership. But have renounced the secret ways of shame, not walking in craftiness nor falsifying the word of Elohim, but by the manifestation of the truth, recommending ourselves to every human conscience in the sight of Elohim. So now let's understand what he's talking about here. We have renounced the secret ways of shame, or the secrets of shame. In other words, we're not doing anything in private. Okay, the things you do in private are usually the things that have shame linked to it, that you're trying to hide something, sort of from an idiomatic point of view. He says, but we have not walked in craftiness, nor have we done anything that would be falsifying to the word. When Yahweh spent all of that time saying, this is our covenant, you are going to obey everything that comes out of my mouth, this is good, it brings life, all the way through the end of Deuteronomy, anything that we would say against that would be falsifying the word. He said, we are not falsifying the word, but by manifestation of the truth, seeing it walked out in a more full way, okay, that's bringing a recommendation. That's recommending ourselves to everybody. And indeed, verse 3, if our good news has been veiled, it has been veiled in those who are perishing. In other words, again, those who have the veiled hearts. They're not hearing it. They're not receiving it. He says, not that we're not saying it. If our good news has been veiled, it's because it's been veiled by those and in those who are perishing. In whom the mighty one of this age has blinded the minds of the unbelieving so that the enlightening of the good news of the esteem of Messiah, who is a likeness of Elohim, does not shine on them. Again, do you see the problem? It's consistent. It's not the words that were on the tablets. It's not the law. It's the person with a blinded mind or a veiled heart. Okay? He's consistent in the way he's pointing the finger at the people, not at what Elohim gave, not at the laws itself, but at the people who had their problems. He said they've had their minds blinded so that the enlightening, so that, in other words, he would shine light, he would shed light on these things, cannot be received because they are blind. For we do not proclaim ourselves, but Messiah Yeshua, the Master, and ourselves, your servants, for the sake of Yeshua. He says we're not proclaiming ourselves for our own purposes. We're doing this to bring glory and honor to Messiah and to what the Creator is doing. For Elohim, who said, let light shine out of darkness, is the one who is shown in our hearts for the enlightening of the knowledge of the esteem of Elohim in the face of Yeshua Messiah. So what he's trying to do consistently here is bring context to those who may be embracing the Torah but are not embracing Messiah as part of the context of how we apply it. Does it make sense to everyone? The law itself is not the problem here. It's how the people are approaching this issue of, remember, it's hard for us here. We are a mixed multitude who comes together. Very few of us in this particular room are Jewish, in literal sense. So we don't have that dichotomy that was going on in this time of Paul. The vast majority, thousands and thousands and thousands of members of the body were all Jewish. And now all of a sudden, these non-Jews are coming and getting involved. And guess what? There's a rift. There's a challenge of coming together and not seeing the other person. It's like if you have a society that's all white and a society that's all black or all yellow or all green, whatever it is, and you look and now all of a sudden you're coming together and all you can see is there's a difference. Instead of saying, no, but you're a man and I'm a man, you're a woman and she's a woman, but why don't we just see that? Why do we see color? Well, here they're seeing previous background by birth. They're seeing genealogy. And they're saying, hey, we with the genealogy know better than you do. That's why Paul says, what, do I have to bring you letters showing I was a student of Gamaliel and I've got all of these, you know, endorsements to show that I know what I'm talking about as a Benjamite? Do I need to do that? Actually, in one of the letters he does that, right? He says, here I am, a Hebrew of Hebrews, a Benjamite, student of Gamaliel. I know what I'm talking about. And by the way, he would be in big trouble claiming that lineage and talking about the law in any negative sense. There's just no way. He would be shaming his teacher in the biggest of ways. I mean, huge. He would be shaming his teacher in the most egregious way to claim that lineage and then say what is most dear to his teacher is somehow bad and death and awful and kills. And that's not the problem here. He's saying, look, a problem is that the mighty one of this age has blinded the minds. Let's give Hasatan credit finally where it deserves to be. The mighty one of this age is blinding the minds. The problem is he's only blinding the minds of the willing participants. Those who willingly don't want to see it. You want to see it, it's right there. Elohim will open your minds. The thing is, he's got to disturb your peace. You've got to want to see it. Because he's poked a few people, disturbed their peace, and they still don't want to see it. Don't be a willing participant. The willingly ignorant, the willingly blinded. He says, for we do not proclaim ourselves, but Messiah Yeshua the Master, and ourselves your servants for the sake of Yeshua. For Elohim has said, let light shine out of darkness, is the one who is also shown in our hearts. Now when he says, let light shine out of darkness, he's not saying the law was darkness. You were darkness. We read that in Ephesians, that you were walking in darkness. But let the light shine in the darkness as the one who shone in our hearts, because that's where the darkness was, for the enlightening of the knowledge of the esteem of Elohim in the context of the face of Yeshua Messiah. And by the way, the face meaning seeing him. You know, when I say to you, I want to talk to you face to face, I want to see you, you want to see me. So that's what we're talking about with the face there. And we have this treasure in earthen vessels. So this treasure is in our physical body so that the excellence of the power might be of Elohim and not of us. Being hard pressed on every side, but not crushed. Being perplexed, but not in despair. Being persecuted, but not forsaken. Being thrown down, but not destroyed. Always bearing about in the body of the dying of the Master Yeshua, that the life of Yeshua might also be manifested in our body. Okay, so here he's contrasting that Messiah who put on a flesh suit physically died. The flesh must die. So the resurrected Messiah who is now resurrected, that we can have that resurrecting within ourselves as well. The flesh must die. So he says, always bearing about in the body of the dying, bearing about in the body, in your body, the dying of the Messiah, that the life of Yeshua might also be manifested. For we the living are always delivered to death for the sake of Yeshua. that the life of Yeshua might also be manifested in our mortal flesh, so that death indeed is working in us, but the life in you. So here he's saying, actually saying for him, his leadership, saying, I'm willing to get killed, persecuted, and done all these things to get the message to you so that you might have life. See, all of you are somewhat invisible. I know you come up here and wave at the end of the service and all that kind of stuff, but you're really somewhat invisible. Very few people out there, except because you bring attention to yourself, maybe posting something on Facebook, are being attacked in the way that somebody like me would for being out there openly doing this. There has to be those willing to take the bigger throws of the stones and the arrows and everything else that are coming at you, all the garbage and junk, because we're willing to, for your sake, to bring life, put ourselves in a position where people can throw stuff at us. That's what Paul is saying, okay? He's saying, I'm willing to do all of that so that you can have life. So I can bring you the message. But having the same spirit of belief, according to what has been written in verse 13, I believe, therefore I spoke. We also believe, therefore we also speak. Knowing that he who raised up the Master Yeshua shall also raise us up through Yeshua and shall present us with you. For all this is for your sake, so that favor, having spread through the many, would cause thanksgiving to overflow unto the esteem of Elohim. So all of this is to bring glory and honor to Elohim. Elohim did not spend all the time from the beginning all the way until Paul's talking here, giving the commandments, expecting people to keep them, punishing them for breaking them, only to say that somehow doing away with them or ignoring them is now going to bring him glory and honor. We have to have at least the tiniest bit of logic in our heads, okay? Let's try to be at least a little bit rational in our thinking. What mainstream Christianity has taught you is completely illogical and irrational, and the only reason you bought into it is because you were blinded. You had a veiled heart, and you were blinded. Otherwise, as soon as that was pulled away, what did you see? You saw, this is completely illogical and irrational. It makes no sense. By the way, I'm reading this here, and this is also endorsing for me the strength of the veracity of this, because I see this playing out. It's written here, and I see it happening today even. In your lives, your testaments too are testimonies of this happening right here. Okay? Therefore, because of all that he just said, we do not lose heart. But even if our outward man is perishing, the inward man is being renewed day by day. Ah, there's part of our context. When he's talking about these things, he's talking about it's a contrast of the outward man and the inward man. The outward flesh and the inward spirit. The fleshly outside of us wants to just me, I. But that inward part, the part that dwells on things and thinks about things more and is concerned about things in a much bigger way, not the now, me, immediacy. That's being renewed while the outward part, with all of its desires and all of its lusts, is dying and perishing. This is still in the context of what he's comparing when he's comparing the letter and the spirit. We're still in that same context of what they're struggling with here in Corinth. Let's remember now, in that context, he says, do not let lose heart, because even as our outward man is perishing, the inward man is being renewed day by day. For this slight momentary pressure is working for us a far more exceeding and everlasting weight of esteem. So this is going to bring, going through this process, is going to bring even more honor and glory. We are not looking on what is seen, but what is not seen. For what is seen passes away, but what is not seen is everlasting. By the way, we could take that back to the same thing with the spies. The people went and spied out the land. They saw big walled cities, huge people, armies and all kinds of things going on. They saw that. Of course, two of them saw, wait a minute, we could see what Elohim would do to this place, and he would take care of those armies, and he would take care of those walled cities, and he'll take care of all of those challenges. We see the milk and honey and the big grapes and all the other wonderful things. It's a beautiful land. But are you focusing on the fleshly eyes or the spiritual eyes? See, the fleshly eyes saw the giants and the walls and all that stuff. The spiritual eyes are seeing it as Elohim sees it. So they take that back to the law. You see the law one way. How does he see it? Thou shalt not commit adultery. Well, how did you see it? A lot of them saw it as, well, as long as I didn't really sleep with her, or as long as I didn't sleep with him, hey, I'm good. Then Yeshua says, no, Elohim sees it a little bit more than that. So let's understand. Some of you may say, when it says not to steal, Well, you know what? We're actually told in some of the expansion in Leviticus chapters like 16 through 20, somewhere in there, that you can steal by not working hard and giving an honest day's work. You can steal by not paying your employees on time and the way you're supposed to. There's all kinds of stealing that's not actually taking somebody's stuff away from them. So when you do the things that you do, you could be stealing. Okay, you go to work and you don't, and you find yourself spending a whole bunch of time doing all, you know, texting or whatever you're doing or playing on Facebook or whatever thing you're doing. You're stealing your employer's time. Even though you didn't literally go into one of the shelves in the office there or the factory area and literally take something and stick it in your pocket or whatever, but you're stealing. So are you willing to accept a more full understanding of these things as opposed to just going, well, I'm going to look through it through the fleshly eyes. I'm just going to look at what I see, what I see, not what he sees. Are you going to look at things through his eyes? All right, chapter 5. For we know that if the tent of our earthly house is destroyed, we have a building from Elohim, a house not made with hands, everlasting in the heavens. I don't know. Is it just me? Or is he still talking about the body, the flesh versus the spirit that way? He's still not talking about the letters and the laws and the things written on stones. The problem is still having a house, an earthly house being destroyed so that we can have a heavenly one. He's still talking about you, your flesh. For indeed, if in this we groan, longing to put on our dwelling, which is from the heaven, so that having put it on, we shall not be found naked. For indeed, we who are in this tent groan, being burdened, not because we wish to put it off, but to put on the other, so that what is to die might be swallowed up by life. So what's dying? Are we all suffering and struggling because we just won't let go of the law? Is that what he's saying? Or are we all struggling because we won't let go of the flesh? The me, what I want, the desires of the me, the I. What I want, what I don't want. That's got to die and be swallowed up by life. Now he who has prepared us for this same purpose is Elohim, who has given us the Spirit as a pledge of what is to come. Okay? This is important. It's a pledge of what. Therefore, being always of good courage and knowing that while we are at home in the body, we are absent from the master. Oh, here's another good verse they love to use. This is not talking about out-of-body experiences. This is not talking about some ooey-gooey spiritualization. When you are at home in your flesh, you are not connected with the Elohim, with Messiah, with the Master. So to be absent the body is to be present with the Lord, as you've always heard these things saying, meaning when you are not focused on your flesh and me, I, you are now walking in the presence of Elohim, presence of Messiah. When you're walking, aren't we told that when we're walking in our flesh, we are cut off? Okay, so when you are at home in the body, you're absent from the master. The same thing goes the other way around. If you are absent the body, meaning you are not focused on and your mind is not focused on. Anybody remember that they took attendance in school? How many of you were absent but you're still sitting in a chair in the classroom? Do you understand what that's what he's talking about. You could be there, but you're not there. He's saying to be absent of the body would be to be present with Yahweh, and the other way around. To be present in your body, to be present in your flesh, means you're absent with the Master. It's not real complicated. However, it's been so badly taught for so long, it's hard for us to understand. It's Christianese. It's a phrase that should be simple to understand, but it doesn't go that way anymore. He says, look, verse 7 explains it as we go forward. Because we walk. This is what he's talking about in the previous verse. Absent or present has to do with what? Your walk. He says, because we walk. Okay, so what we're doing determines whether we're absent or present, where we're absent or present. Now, if we're going to walk by emunah, by belief, and not by sight, which is the way I see it versus the way he sees it. Take it that way. Belief is the way he sees it, and I'm going to embrace that, or by sight is the way I see it. So if we walk by the way he sees it, not by the way we see it, we are of good courage and are well pleased rather to be absent from the body and to be present with the Master. Because if we're going to see it his way, that will be the case. This is not one of those things that has to do with going to heaven or doing other things. This is not a out-of-body thing. This is just a metaphor for where your head's at and where your heart's at. Is your heart on you and the flesh, or is it on him and his ways? If it's on him and his ways, then guess what? You're absent the body and you're present with him. If it's on you, then you're in the body and you're absent with him. It's not really complicated. So we also make it our aim to be well-pleasing to him, whether being at home or being away from home. So now he's talking about, hey, whether I'm traveling here to where you are or traveling there, he says, we want to do what's pleasing to him. And also he's talking about it from a deeper sense, whether I'm in this fleshly body, I want to be pleasing to him, and whether when I get transformed into an incorruptible body, I want to be pleasing to him. For we all have to appear before the judgment seat of Messiah in order for each one to receive according to what he has done in the body, and here's the key, whether good or evil. And what defines those terms? The Torah is good. Bending, perverting, and twisting it is evil. What could be more evil than telling you it's done away with? Telling it's no longer valid. Go do a word study. Figure out, according to Scripture, what is good and what is evil. He says, don't forget, we are all going to appear before the judgment seat of Messiah in order for each one to receive according to what you have done. It doesn't say according to what Messiah did. You're going to receive according to what you did. I know that's a hard one for those of you that maybe are brand new and just coming out of the churches because you've never heard that. Because after all, there's like zero accountability and you are not responsible for anything according to the way Christianity teaches it. Except to choose Messiah, the way they see it. Otherwise, everything bad is the devil's fault. Everything good is Messiah's credit. You get nothing for you. No, you're going to get judged according to what you did in the body. Now, you could talk about in the body, him saying in the body meaning the body of Messiah. No, you're going to be judged according to what you did in this fleshly body. Because that's the context he's been talking about. Absent the body, present the body, blah, blah, blah. You're going to be judged according to what you did in this flesh suit. And by the way, Paul's very consistent about this. Romans 2 says the same thing. Lots of places Paul says the same thing. You'll be judged according to your works. I don't know how much more, you know, simple it can be. Even all the way in Revelation 21, 22, it says that Messiah is coming and he's bringing his reward with him to give according to what you did, according to your works. It's the very last thing in the book, in Revelation 22. In verse 12, I'd see I come speedily and my reward is with me to give each one according to his works. That's the very end of everything. And yet still, what you do matters. Why? Because it demonstrates where your heart's at. It demonstrates whether or not you have the two great commands. Are you loving him with all your heart, might, and strength, or are you loving each other with the same thing? Are you having the right understanding of the relationships he desires you to have? And it's all about the relationships. Let's keep that in the context there. Because we're all going to appear before the judgment seat. Verse 11, knowing therefore the fear of Yahweh, we persuade men, but we have been made manifest to Elohim, and I also trust in your consciences to have been manifested. Now look, first of all, let's stop at the beginning of the thing where it says, knowing therefore the fear of Yahweh. Go back to the teaching called the fear of Yahweh. Fear of Yahweh is the beginning of wisdom, the beginning of understanding, the beginning of knowledge. It's step one in Deuteronomy 10:12. Hey, we haven't gone there in a while. Okay. And now, Israel, what does Yahweh ask of you? Moses tells us, Deuteronomy 10:12, but to fear Yahweh Elohim, to walk in all his ways. Do you think Deuteronomy 10:12 all of a sudden gets negated here in the New Testament? And now, Israel, what is it? Oh, well, that was for Israel is what they'll say. Yeah, but see, it's all the way about Israel, all the way to the Revelation 22. There's nothing in this book from the time it becomes about Israel where it ceases to become about Israel. Or to be about Israel. Now, the good news is everybody can become Israel. It's a covenantal process. You have to covenant. What's the covenant? We've been talking about this for 43 parts. Yahweh says, if you do what I say, then you get to be Israel. Romans 11 talks about it. We're going to get to that eventually here when we get out of Corinthians. I think we're going to Romans next. And eventually we'll end up in chapter 11. We're going to start a little bit further for context earlier than chapter 11. But when we get there, you know, you got the olive tree and you got the natural roots and you got the grafted in roots and all that stuff. But it's being all about being Israel. Go listen to Discovering Your Identity if you don't know what I'm talking about. Okay? As part of the Covenant Community 101 series. All right. Back to where we were here. So, verse 11, knowing therefore the fear of Yahweh, how could you have the fear of Yahweh and say the law was done away with? Can there be two more opposite concepts? I'm serious. I mean, in pure simplicity, can there be two more opposite concepts than fearing Yahweh and doing away with what he said? He says over and over, like 1,000 times in from Exodus to Deuteronomy, do, guard, obey what I say. This is all I want you to do. He says, knowing this fear, this is how we are approaching it. He's talking from leadership. Knowing therefore the fear of Yahweh, we persuade men, but we have been made manifest to Elohim. So in other words, he's saying Elohim knows what we're all about. Because remember, he started off in chapter 3 saying, hey, do I need to come up with more like resumes and letters from people recommending us? He's still on that same kind of establishing his authority here. He says, we have been made manifest, Elohim. We know that he's judging everybody. We got to appear before the seat. And I also trust in your consciences to have been manifested. In other words, I'm saying, I trust that you've seen also what I've been doing in your lives here in Corinth with this congregation, is what he's saying. For we do not again commend ourselves to you, but give you an occasion to boast on our behalf in order that you have an answer for those who take pride in appearance and not in heart. So again, he's going back to some of these people that are doing for appearances, but they're not doing it from the heart. Their hearts are still veiled. For whether we are beside ourselves, it was from Elohim, or whether we are of sound mind, it is for you. For the love of Messiah compels us, having judged this, that if one died for all, then all died. And he died for all, that those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for him who died for them and was raised. So he's saying, look, you were bought and paid for. The whole point, look, the reason they were brought out, why were they brought out? This is for the Jewish side of it, right? He's talking to people that might be being influenced by that. Why did he bring them out of Egypt? He brought them out of Egypt. He bought them with a price, same idea, so that they would serve him for his purposes. Nothing has changed, just a deepening of the understanding, taking it to another level, building on the foundation, not wiping it out, not contrary to, but building upon. And Yeshua does that with every word he says. He takes what they already knew, and he's speaking to a Jewish community, and he builds upon it. Verse 16, so from now on, onwards, we know no one according to the flesh. If we have known Messiah according to the flesh, yet now we no longer know him thus. In other words, we're not knowing him just according to what the people have said about the world and the flesh. Okay, yeah, we know. Christians have the same problem. They know him according to the flesh. They know Messiah came and that he died and was resurrected. And that's kind of about it. There's no deeper understanding to what he did, why he did it, what the purpose was, who he was, who he is, etc. And so he's saying, look, from now onwards, we know no one according to the flesh. We had our eyes open. If we have no Messiah according to the flesh, yet now we no longer know him that way. Therefore, if anyone is in Messiah, he is a new creature. In other words, that old mindset, that old way of thinking has been passed away. That's what's died. That's what needed to be killed off. That's why we talk about burying the old man when we go in the water. We get immersed. We're putting to death in our members the old ways. Well, these are all more quotes that Paul says in other places. He says, therefore, if anyone is in Messiah, he's a renewed creature. The old matters have passed away. Now, the word matters is in italics, so that's not in the Greek. It just says the old has passed away. See, all have become new. Now, the word matters is inserted. It's not in the Greek. If you have anything in your Bibles that's in italics, it means that it was added because someone thought it would help in clarity. But if we have the context here, it's saying, look, if anyone is in Messiah, a renewed creature. You're a new creature. I mean, it's talking about this is a new idea, the old has passed away and all have become new. There's a renewing, there's a clarity, there's a refreshing. And all are from Elohim, who has restored us to favor with himself through. This is the key. All of this is about restoring to favor. Ooh, why were they not in favor?
Well, you know, because they were trying to keep the law.
No, because they were not trying to keep the law. Because they were not obedient, they were not submissive, and they certainly weren't doing it with emunah, with faith. So now he's trying to say this through Messiah is bringing about a restoring of favor to himself through Messiah Yeshua, who has given us the service of restoration to favor. That is, that Elohim was in Messiah restoring the world to favor unto himself, not reckoning their trespass to them, and has committed to us the word of restoration of favor. Now, follow this here. That is that Elohim was in Messiah, restoring the world to favor unto himself, not reckoning their trespasses. What is a trespass? They were stepping and breaching over lines they shouldn't have stepped over and breached over, and it had to do with their obedience and submission to Torah. That's what got them out of favor. That's what got Assyria to come. That's what got Babylon to come. They were out of favor because of their choices. Remember the teaching, making decisions, the reason you exist. It's all about the choices we make. He said, but he has come to bring and restore back to favor those who were, by not reckoning their trespasses to them. In other words, he's made it possible that your trespasses can be wiped out, provided you don't keep walking in them. In other words, they earned their punishment, but there's a path back where that punishment which you earned is no longer reckoned to you. They earned being lo ruchama, no mercy. They earned being lo ami, not my people. They earned it very well. But they also turn around and earn being called children of the living Elohim. And it's through acceptance and understanding that there's a restoration process that Yeshua begins here. Verse 20. Therefore, we are envoys on behalf of Messiah as though Elohim were pleading through us. We beg on behalf of Messiah, be restored to favor with Elohim, for he made him who knew no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of Elohim. This is what it's all about. But he's not saying that we become the righteousness of Elohim because we now can do whatever we want, and we get to decide what's righteous. Because even Yeshua, when he says, someone said to him, well, good master, good teacher, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, whoa, hold on, time out. No one's good but one. In other words, one gets to define what good is. I've said this a couple of times in this teaching series, go listen to Well Done, Good and Trustworthy Servant. Part one teaches you what good means, okay? According to Scripture. I think we need to be finished before we get to chapter 6. Hopefully that's enough for this week. Okay, and we'll continue in chapter 6 next time. But this is important stuff. We need to grasp the context because it all comes down to him saying in verse 6, he says, who also made us competent as servants of a renewed covenant. And so we have to say, well, what is that renewed covenant all about? What is he talking about with the idea of covenant there? But then also he tells us in verse 14, but their minds were hardened for to this day when the old covenant is being read. So the whole idea of covenant is mixed in here, and we have to understand what's the letter, what's the spirit, because otherwise we have no idea how to deal with this stuff, and you're going to have to, if not already, deal with this stuff. So hopefully this is becoming more clear, more simple, but the context is key. What is really going on here in Corinth? Let's go ahead and pray. Father, we want to come before you. We want to appreciate and thank you so much for your word and for whatever inspiration and guidance you may have given me that is of you. Anything that was not of you, please just have everyone ignore it. But that which is of you, Father, have people embrace it. Have them to see and understand that it was not from me and my flesh, but from you. And that, Father, since we mostly just read the word, help us to truly embrace and understand it in context, to know what it was that the writers and speakers in the word are talking about and to that audience and what their issues are. So that, Father, that we can truly be absent our body so we can be present with you. So that we're not in our flesh, that we're not in our fleshly mind and fleshly hearts, but that we're vertically focused on the things above so that we can be restored to favor through Messiah Yeshua. So Father, we want to thank you, praise you, giving you all glory and honor as we come to you, appreciating that he became sin for us so that we could have that. Well, it says he made him who knew no sin to be sin for us so that in him we might become the righteousness of Elohim. We would like to be looked at and known as the righteous ones of Elohim because the sin that stained us can be removed through Messiah Yeshua. So Father, we thank you. We praise you, giving you all glory and honor in his precious name, the name of Messiah Yeshua. Amen. Amen. Amen.